Okay, welcome and hello. This is the Open Forum, if you didn't know where you are. The Open Forum has been in business for 49 years at this address, number 10 Shepherd Street, Humanist House, ever since 1971, non-stop, except for the last two unspeakable months, which are better forgotten. The important thing to realise is that we're back in business after what could be called a long hangover or a nightmare or whatever you choose to call it. Let's just call it, I have my own word for it, coronaritis. And you can put it up on the web, there's no copyright. Coronaritis is a disease. It starts here. Now, welcome back to the Open Forum. You're doubly welcome. As I said, we're back in business. And the Open Forum is held at Humanist House every Wednesday at 8 with a speaker nearly every Wednesday. Are you finished? Nearly every Wednesday. Oh, every Wednesday, but we don't have a speaker every Wednesday. None of our speakers are paid. They all do this out of the goodness of their heart. We've had topics covering every known cause, every known type of belief system that you could imagine, and a few that perhaps you don't want to. No opinions expressed at the Open Forum have any connection to the Humanist Society of New South Wales. This is not a meeting of the Humanist Society of New South Wales. This is the Open Forum, which meets at Humanist House, courtesy of the Humanist Society, who own the building and give us house room every Wednesday out of the goodness of their heart. So welcome, and tonight's topic, as advertised, is, and the first topic we've had since the 25th of March, which is disgraceful, but I was not in charge of that. The topic is climate change and global warming. Australia says no. And this is based on data compiled from official Australian Bureau of Meteorology statistics and charts, compiled and studied by our speaker, Dr. David Gregory Murphy. I'd like you to welcome him, please.
Thank you for coming along. I'm sure many people are glad to be back, I suppose, after the break and going out to intellectually stimulating topics such as this. And what better way to start off with global warming and climate change? Now, I say I am an advocate of climate change because it's happened for 4,000 million years and it'll keep happening, but it happens slowly. But on this global warming topic, we've heard a lot about that. We've heard a lot of controversy and talk about global warming, and there are arguments on both sides. And as they say, arguments about law and genealogy can go on and on forever and ever and ever, and there will always be arguments going on. So I thought, well, there are these arguments, and they're interesting on both sides, and they can keep bringing them up. And so I thought, how can one come to a definitive answer that is empirical and observation-based, evidence-based, and so on, and overcome all the waffle and all the talk and all of that, and come up with some conclusive arguments such that I can do one of my pet topics on a contractual civil bet and get into the courts with it. And about 10 years ago, I did a study on rainfall for Sydney to see, does rainfall in Sydney follow the solar patterns of 11 years. So by moving 5-year averages, I was able to do a chart. I would have printed it out, but the library is still closed at Concord, so I couldn't print out that particular chart, but it's up on the website, and you can see the rainfall chart for Sydney for 140 years from 1859 to 2019, 160 years, and you'll see it follows the solar cycles. Every 10 years, it peaks. Every 10 years, it troughs. And I knew, having done the rainfall study 10 years ago, I thought, well, I will adopt the same approach for global warming and climate change. By going back to the Bureau of Meteorology observation statistics up on the website.
Sorry, some people like the sound of their own voices.
So, we start sort of with a premise that one can come to some conclusive conclusions based on the observation data by the Australian Bureau of Meteorology going back to about 1855. So how many people think that might be a really good way to work out, is there evidence for global warming happening or not? Can I see a show of hands who think going on the Bureau of Meteorology observation statistics is a cut and dried way of getting a result? And say it's an arguable result that you can win a bet on and make some money, a contractual civil bet. Because there's a lot of money involved. People who are aware of what's going on in global warming are aware there's a lot of money swirling around out there into this. And this is the way you can start to get some of that if you would like to do that. And give me referrals as to who's promoting this stuff. Where's it coming from? Because what I did towards on April 1st is I put in the Australian a cease and desist notice. A legal notice for cease and desist for those who advocate for global warming to cease and desist, or as of July 1st, the contractual civil bet will come into play and then they will be taken on. And I need people to tell me who some of these people are who are promoting this stuff. There are some big organisations and there's large amounts of money involved, and this is something that's going to go on for a long, long time. On the 15th of December 2015, in the Supreme Court in Equity, I obtained a precedent for something called a contractual civil bet, a dispute for consideration, a contention for cash, and there is a process to do it that's been through the court. And so I intend to use that, and that's how we take them on. Because, as I said, there's big money involved in this, and this is a process where you can get a part of that. I thought last Sunday's Good Weekend had an article in it, which I thought might have been a response to that, someone taking it up, but it wasn't quite it, that one. But there has been one defence come back from one government department that I've served, and they put in a form defence, which clearly came from a solicitor. I thought, okay, the battle's on. So they've hit me with the first defence that came back. So, I've got some data which I produced off the website, and I'm going to go through that tonight. I don't have many copies because I couldn't print off extras. I gave out quite a few at the Climate Skeptics group that meets on Thursdays over at Barnwell Park. I gave out a whole bunch, but I haven't got many left and I haven't been able to print up any more at the library. So,
what are you, a solicitor?
Law therapist, researcher, analyst,
ex-teacher. Look, let's leave questions till question time, please. Thank you.
Have you been here before?
Yeah, I've been here before. I've spoken before.
Sorry.
I do a number of things. I don't do just one thing. That's boring. I do a number of things. All sorts of things. I don't have enough copies of those, but if you would like a copy, you can fill in that sheet and put down your email address. I can email it to you, or a postal address, and I'll post it out when I've got more copies printed off. So I'll make that sheet available, and you can put down your name. I'd like a name, phone number. You can go on my Global Warming Australia Says No email list to get notifications and things. So we'll do that. So I might pass that around if people would like. Oh, you can see it up on the website. That'll be available on the website. The cease and desist notice. To put on notice, it's a legal notice, and I learnt that process in the Commercial Tribunal in an action. Deputy Chairman Davidson taught me that in 1995, that one publicises and advertises, and then it becomes legal notice, and you can start to take action and do things on that process. So that's been put in place that we can all benefit from. So I'll start off. This is the sheet. Everything is there. It's a battle sheet. This is for a fight. This is not, as I said, a contribution to scientific debate. This is for a fight. This is a legal fight. Scientific argument will just go on and on and on, and nothing will get resolved, and it'll go on forever. This is to get a conclusion and get paid and make money. Their money, because there's a lot of money swirling around. That encourages them, so we've got to do something. So, climate change and global warming. Australia says no. I'll read through these, and this is our manifesto. We have here the website for the graphs and charts, 8 for each state and territory, of 10 of them all together, New South Wales, Victoria, the various states, the territories, and you can click on the link and go to the charts and see what the results were that were found from the 1.5 years of analysis of doing this particular study. Took 1.5 years to work out how to do it, and even today I came to a stunning conclusion at the end, and ask me what that was right at the end of tonight's meeting, and I'll tell you something that I discovered, that this study led to something which I hadn't seen until today. So ask me that at the end, please. So I'll read it out. We start with premises and process. One premise is one can achieve a conclusive result from those Bureau of Meteorology observation data. It's cut and dried, it's numeric, and you can turn it into graphs. You can present and come to conclusions on the basis of it. Which one should be able to win in a court of law? Get a conclusion. Premises and process. In order to best determine the statistical and chartable veracity of alleged so-called global warming and climate change as a result of the alleged greenhouse effect for each state and territory of Australia and for Antarctica, one need go no further than the publicly available Australian Bureau of Meteorology's maximum and minimum temperature observation readings for some 1,969 observation sites across Australia going back to 1856 to be found at, and I give the website, so you can go to the website and start to analyse these things for any country town you want to put up. And if I wore a hat, I'd take my hat off to all those unsung heroes who did all those observation readings over 150 years, each day on all of those sites before it became all automated. And there were people doing these readings for all this time, unsung heroes who did this work that leads to this study now being able to be made available. And in doing this, I achieved some graphs that have probably never been seen before. And you'll be able to see those, and I've got some of those graphs here to give out tonight. Two, the observation raw data to be found there is the final arbiter of what is happening, temperature-wise, in regard to the global warming debate as it concerns Australia. I look forward to many other researchers in other countries following suit with similar studies of their own Bureau of Meteorology equivalents, observation temperature histories, and pursuing the course of action I outlined below. So I'd like to see this go worldwide. I'm just doing Australia. Somebody else can do other countries, because there are bureaus of meteorology in other countries and they would have histories going back a long time and their information may be available for their researchers. Three, the accompanying data and charts to be found at the above links show what I believe to be the best and simplest way this data can be presented, analysed and interpreted. And that's by way of some charts, which I will go into detail later on, which tell an interesting story, which is indisputable. So we're not dealing with waffle and endless argument all the time. Four, for this study, only those 211 sites with over 100 years of temperature observations, longevity, were taken into account so as to discover any long-term cycles and make relative findings. I didn't pick sites that have only been going 10, 20, 30 years. I picked the ones that have got a history of over 100 years. And there's 211 of those, and that's plenty enough to work with. And it took a long time to do it. Five, each state has been studied and charted separately to discover its own results. 8 charts are provided for each state, 4, 1, 4 relating to the maximums, because when you study to do this, you've got to break it up into the maximums and the minimum readings, because there's both, and they tell different stories. 1 to 4 relate to the maximum readings, 5 to 8, for the minimums, and I assert for my study, the minimums are to be more significant than the maximums, because the maximums are greatly affected by the sun. And that's what's being quoted a lot all the time. The minimums tell a truer story. And if there's global warming, it's got to show up in those minimums too, not just the maximums, which are affected by the sun, by the aggregation of building material, by the tarmac effect during the day, which mucks up the maximums. But the minimums tell a different story. So that's something to look at. The results are presented in spreadsheets with the 8 charts each, and you're able to see on the left the very formulas on the spreadsheet. It's on the internet, so you can see the formulas, you can check it, that have been used to analyse the data to the right, to the data. The data for each of these 200 sites is over to the right of the graph on the website, and you can see all the monthly readings and things for all the past years for a whole lot of major towns and places in the various states. Makes interesting reading for people who like that sort of stuff. An interesting thing I noticed as I was doing the study was we had a lot of bushfires back around October, November, December, and they said that was caused by global warming. But when you look at the temperature statistics, January, February of last year were the hot ones. The months of October, November, December were unremarkable. If it was caused by global warming, those bushfires should have happened at the beginning of 2019, not when they did. So the conclusion is there's something artificial about this.
I was too.
Because the temperature observation sites don't bear out that don't support that argument that it was global warming that did it.
It was a drought too.
There was drought as well too. Yeah.
There's something on your email that you might want to relay.
Well, hang on. Let's not get into the interchange until the presentation is over. Otherwise, you know.
Okay. So we'll go on to the section to do with the charts, and I'm going to talk about the process and the charts. And as I said, here are the charts. Four for maximums for each of the states, 10 pages altogether, four for minimums, 80 charts altogether, up on the internet, all available for study, analysis, challenge, and for the those who advocate for global warming to try and overcome it. They can't overcome it. The charts. The first chart for each state is the annual average of all the maximums of a state's size. So the average of all the maximums for any particular state is the first chart. The average of all the minimums for any particular state is the fifth chart. So I did each state by getting the average of all the maximums, minimums, and so on. These calculated figures are to be found at the blue column B. A standard linear trend line has been generated by the spreadsheet program. So for each chart, there is a trend line. And that is very telling, the trend line. Does the trend go up or does the trend go down? And some trends go up and some trends do go down and some trends are dead flat, where nothing is happening over 100 years. The second chart for each state shows simultaneous 5, 10, 20 and 50 year moving averages of the maximum temperatures. That's the second chart. And the sixth one is the same again, but based on the minimum temperature readings for that state. So you can look at the maximums and the minimums of the readings and compare them. Are they in step or are they at odds with each other? And there's interesting stories by looking at the moving averages for the maximums and the minimums, and you'll find they get out of step. You think this is an interesting story. It can lead to all sorts of discussion. A standard linear trend line again has been generated by the spreadsheet program, usually based on the 20-year moving average. 20 years to find trends that are happening. The third chart is the highest of the maximums over the 12 months of each year for each state. So what I did is for each year I picked the highest of the maximums over the months for each year and did a graph on the highest of the maximums. Not just the average, but the highest of the maximums. So are they going up or are there ones over 100 years ago that are just as high as today? Which is the case. They got very hot over 100 years ago. The seventh chart is the highest of the minimums. This might sound strange. There's the highest of the maximums, but of the minimum readings, you can get the highest of all of those and do a chart as well on the highest of all the minimums. And if you can do a chart on the highest of all the maximums and the highest of all of the minimums, you can also do another chart, which is the minimum of all the maximums and the minimum of all the minimums. So you can make up four charts out of this and start to tell really interesting stories, and are they in step or out of step for each state?
Yeah.
And you start to think, this gets interesting. Are those trend lines rising, or are they falling, or are they flat? If they're flat, well, that's not an argument for global warming. If they're declining, and some of them are, that's an argument for global cooling. Right. And it shows up.
And if they're rising?
If they're rising, it appears it's an argument for global warming. But I'll come to something that fudges the figures, that mucks it up in a moment. Again, a standard linear trend line has been generated to show upward or downward or even flat trends. Now I have to go into some detail here. The fourth chart is the minimum maximum over the 12 months across all of the sites for each state for each year for that state or territory. And the eighth chart is the same again, the lowest of all the 12 minimum months across each site for each year for that site. It is submitted that the eighth chart for each state is the acid test for any global warming, as it's the lowest of the minimums for each site. And if global warming is happening, it's got to show up in those minimums. The maximums are, I'll talk about the problem there, but the minimums are the purest readings. And the minimums of the minimums is the important one. So, is the acid test for any global warming, as it is the lowest minimum of the minimums for each site in each state over 100 years. If there is any global warming being caused by excess carbon dioxide, which is only 0.18% of the atmosphere, 1/600th, really, why don't they argue nitrogen does it? It's 78%. Why don't blame nitrogen? They'd get more people to believe that. It must show up here in the trend line, as the maximum readings tend to be influenced. Now, this is the problem with the maximums. They get influenced by things. Human habitation, such as continual increase of heat-absorbing building materials causing increased ambient heat in heat-sink urban centres, which ambient increased heat finds its way into the maximums readings because they're in near or being radiated from these buildings that absorb heat. During the day, in former times, solar radiation was absorbed by plants as photosynthesis, but greenery made way for more and more urban construction, their results increased heat as reflected in the maximum readings. Not so much in the minimums, they're a bit devoid of that. On the carbon dioxide note, it's been observed that where there is an excess of carbon dioxide, as in a greenhouse, the plants take up the excess and flourish. This is true greenhouse effect, not the one they're talking about. True greenhouse effects is the plants flourish when there's extra carbon dioxide. And then we get more plants and more food. This is the true greenhouse effect, plants proliferating due to the extra carbon dioxide. And thirdly, observation sites are increasingly being positioned at airports. This has been going on for a few decades now, that the observation reading sites are being positioned at airports rather than in the built-up centres so much. And the resulting readings are slightly impacted by the tarmac effect, where a dark tarmac becomes a massive heat sink radiating ambient heat. That is, unless the tarmac is white. I don't know if they do make them white. Airport buildings may also impact readings because they can radiate heat. So there's the tarmac effect and the aggregation, the build-up of building materials absorbing heat and creating more heat in built-up urban areas than there was 100 years ago, 150 years ago. Doesn't happen so much with the minimums. Minimums don't have that problem. They're purer. Minimums are the important ones. But you don't hear the global warming people talk about the minimums.
No.
They talk about the maximums, the heat, which is not honest. It's intellectual dishonesty. 12. As said, the acid tests for global warming are the eight charts. The eighth charts, the absolute minimums of the minimums for all sites in a state, as they are absolute minimums and not affected by the sun, and the trend lines are of a special significance. In the All Australia summary, there's a summary for all Australia as well. The more reliable ones are the states. The All Australia summary has a problem. An All Australia summary chart is also provided, but please bear in mind that for charts 1, 2, 5 and 6, the results are skewed by the size and weightings of each state and territory, taking into account the area of each state and what its own summary readings contribute to the overall Australia-wide summary charts. For instance, in New South Wales, we've got about 88 sites that have readings. In Northern Territory, they've got 4. But Northern Territory is big, so it skews the readings for Australia. So the Australian reading is an unreliable one, really, because you can't get around this problem of the skewed readings. New South Wales, I think, was only about 10% land size, but has 88 observation centres. So we have a problem. So you really got to look at the states, the individual states. And which one might be the real acid test? Which state, territory or what? What do you think?
Rubber Glen.
Hmm?
Rubber Glen.
No, which state?
Oh, state Victoria.
Victoria.
Well, I advocate it's Antarctica, because that's really not a fair
state.
It's pure. It will be pure, and I'll get to that in a moment. The other ones are the really hot places that are already really, really hot because they're out in desert, and they make interesting readings because they're already really hot anyway.
Yeah.
And they may not be affected by the building material so much. So the really hot ones in the hot areas and the really cold ones in Antarctica. And where was I? Taking into account the area of each state and what its own summary readings contribute to the overall Australia-wide summary charts, it is recommended that to get a true perspective, rather than just referring to the skew-affected national charts, 1, 2, 5 and 6, study each individual state charts, instead taking into account the number of observation stations for each. 14. Apart from the states, the Northern Territory and the Australian site, Antarctica's results are also presented, even though the three Antarctic sites chosen are not of as great longevity as the Australian sites qualifying. But I did Antarctica, though it starts in about the mid to late 40s of the last century. Antarctica is also an acid test for global warming, and chart 8, the minimum of the minimums for each year it is submitted, is the clincher for the contrary argument in relation to global warming. That's the minimum of all the minimums for Antarctica. It's the clincher. If global warming is happening, then it must be clearly evident in the minimum of the minimums across the years for all states in the two territories, including for Antarctica, if it's happening. Macquarie Island data is also analysed and presented. It sits out in the ocean, and the Macquarie Island data is the only one that says yes to global warming. The data for all the others are decidedly no when you study and analyse them and they're graphed. But the Macquarie Island clearly shows it's going up, but I'm told it's volcanic. I didn't know that, but it showed up and I didn't know why it was going up. It was out in the ocean on its own, a little place out there. As the data for all of the 211 sites has been provided, you can pursue your own studies for any particular location now that you know how to do it. The supplied Superheat Sync Sydney charts are an example of just how to do one site. I put Sydney in there as well because it's a real heat sink. So is Melbourne. So we've got some real heat sinks, and then there are other places out in the bush that don't have that heat sink effect. So it's interesting to compare. Any questions? I'll open it up for questions at this point.
Just allow me to make announcements before you take questions. If you sit down,
I'm not finished yet. I've still got.
I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to.
I'm going to move on to a third section, which is a bit different.
We'll take questions all together.
We'll do questions at the end. Okay. The last bit down here, I'll read out because this is the laying down of the contractual civil bet. This is the denouement, the untying of the knot. This is how we proceed, not just further debate and further debate and further debate and gets lost and nobody remembers and somebody dreams up something else to argue against it. It doesn't go anywhere. The laying down of a contractual civil bet. On December 15th in the Equity Division of the Supreme Court of New South Wales, I, as a litigant in person and founding president of the former Sydney Self Litigants Association, had the esteemed honour and privilege of securing the first known precedent for a taken-up contractual civil bet in the Justice Lindsay of the Supreme Court found there to have been a loser in the said civil bet that came before the court. This loss was reversed 10 weeks later. He found I was the loser of the contractual civil bet. But what that meant is he found the civil bet was not void. He found it was live. He found it was in action and there was a loser. And I knew how to turn that round in 10 weeks' time. This loss was reversed 10 weeks later on the 24th of February 2016 in the then contractual civil bet context, which implicitly by finding at that stage there to have been a loser was a finding for the said civil bets having been in force and hence for the said civil bet's existence and antecedents and elements, which go back a long time, and for there to have been some winners. Because if there's a loser, there are some winners in a contractual civil bet, which implicitly he found there were both winners. And he wrote a judgment, which was very interesting, because he wrote a judgment that positioned himself as one of the winners and in line for the money. That was intriguing. But I turned that round after 10 weeks. Thought, no, you can't have that. And he also made money for the witness. So, a play has been written on one of these initial wins. I'm after a producer for this historic epic win of a very large amount of money and for the bringing of the life to story, Catherine's win. I just put that in there because I wrote a play on what happened as to one of the winners. I'd like to produce it in a play. Who forswore her winnings under oath in the Downing Centre local court. I cross-examined her and she forswore her win. And she... Well, that's an interesting story. I now level one of these contractual civil bets at all those who, in the face of this compelling evidence, in particular those profiteering opportunistic fraudsters and scammers who argue now from an unfounded position, unless they can overcome this data. For, as far as Australia goes, I can't argue this for other countries in the world, but this is as for Australia. The amount of the contractual civil bet anti-state, why not bet big? Is again 500 million for governmental organisations, wherever they are in the world, 250 million for corporate, 20 million for individuals, lower antes will be considered. If a levelled contractual civil bet is not taken up, it will be seen as a concession to the evidence and conclusions. For instance, if you say you want to bet, and they say, no, I don't want to bet, say, I won that one, didn't I? That's the end of that. That's a law therapy approach. That's how you win. You want to bet? Nah, I won that one. You don't have to argue all the science or anything. You've got to win. Aspirants to the contractual civil bet must have capacity to throw their hat in the ring. That means money-wise, generally. They've got to have that much money to ante up. Persistence with such arguments in the public arena after 1st of January 2021, I've changed that to the 1st of July, will be taken as acceptance of the challenge of this levelled contractual civil bet. So there's something different. So I've finished that. Now let's... couple of other little points. I got this defence thrown at me. First defence that's come through, typically from a lawyer. They said, you're not a researcher. That's a form defence, it's not a substance. It's a form defence, you're not a researcher. What does it imply? I stole the information, I made it up, somebody else did it, it's on the internet already, all these other things, but I didn't do it, so I don't have capacity. Typical lawyer's sort of argument that came at me. Not a researcher, and it's got implications for other things that I've done research on. I've been doing research for years. It's just something I've enjoyed doing over the years. So, if you want a copy of these, I've got about five of those left tonight. How many would be interested in a copy of that?
How about we contact you over email?
You can do that, I can email it, or you can write down your email address or a postal address on here. And I'll post it out when I can get them printed or email them out in the next day or two or three. And I'll email them out. That'll be the manifesto, so to speak, if you can call it that. And the charts, which will be the charts for all of the states I can email out and territories. Because there are 10 sheets with 8 on each. 4 for maximums and 4 for minimums. And... you can work out how to print them off. They're not that easy to print off on an A3. They're not that easy to print off. So I've got probably about 8 or 9 of these left over because some people didn't want the charts because they just blew their mind looking at a thing like that. They're, whoa, can't think that way. Questions?
Hang on. Do you want now to take general questions or just relating to what you've said? Because generally we have questions all in one go.
It'll be relating to what I said.
When you're finished. Are you finished?
I'm finished the formal talk and the points that I wanted to cover.
Okay. In that case, if you just allow me to make announcements, I won't be long. Okay. Thank you very much. Now, the next three talks, I emphasise for anyone who came late or who wasn't concentrating, the open forum is back in business, as you can see. We've had a long, dark night of the soul. It is now over. And I think you can also say we've pulled that chestnut out of the fire. And I think, as a certain lady friend of mine said a long time ago regarding an accident she had that put her in hospital, I want my life back. That's what she said. I want my life. And that's the way I feel about this whole confounded nonsense we've been through. Without any holds barred, I want my life back, and I'm sure you want yours back too. And let's hope very soon the world goes back to normal and drops the nightmare into the trash can where it belongs. Thank you very much for your patience. Next Wednesday, the Rising of 44, the Battle for Warsaw. This is all about the liberation of Warsaw during the Second World War. The speaker, well known to many of you, Mr. John Hallam, specialist in peace and conflict studies. His lady is Polish. He's been to Poland many times, and he's studied peace and conflict studies here and overseas. That's next Wednesday, the Rising of 44, the Battle for Warsaw. If you know any Poles, bring them along. 17th of June, Mental Illness, A Window of Opportunity. Speaker, Mr. John Pink, student of the impact of mental illness in society. The 24th of June, My Experiences Amongst Aboriginals, Mrs. Beth Sargent, and she will share her experiences over 40 years in the far west of New South Wales and other states. Now, those are the next three talks. Now, I'm also negotiating for speakers in July, and they will be advertised in the next 2 weeks. So the open forum is back in business. Welcome. Is anybody wanting one who hasn't got one? Anybody? Nobody? Oh, I can't give them away. That's very sad. Are there any? You want one? I thought you might. There you go. Now, before we take questions, are there any other announcements from here?
Yes.
Go on.
I'd like to point out that the Sydney Domain is open for business between 2 and sunset on a Sunday.
All right.
Opposite the Art Gallery of New South Wales. Be there if you want a bit of fun.
Do you have to bring your own soapbox?
Bring your own soapbox.
And bring your own soap.
And bring your own soap. Good.
And you don't want any money, do you?
You can bring me money anytime.
All right. Okay. Well, I hope having the Domain at your disposal that you observe social distancing.
Definitely.
Okay.
Especially since I haven't got any soap.
Oh, terrific. Oh, absolutely. Right, you're in training. Now, no further announcements.
Tomorrow the climate realists go back to climate reeling. Barnwell Park Golf Club, 7 p.m. To discuss all things climate related. For more information, see Jim Simpson here, the convener, who didn't want to stand up and be
counted. Could you please stand up, Jim Simpson, so that people know who you are? Jim Simpson is the convener of the Five Dot Climate Realists, is that correct?
Climate Realists, the Five Dot.
Okay, so that's Jim, and he'll tell you all about it. Okay, now I think we can finally take questions directed to David Murphy, yourself. Yes, please.
David, you gave a very interesting spiel on how you've gone about your study, but you gave no hint as to what you actually concluded at the moment.
Yes, I'm going to...
going to be a part of the event.
I'm going to draw a bit of attention to that, and I did ask somebody to remind me of that question at the end. There was something I discovered today.
Today?
Yes.
Wow.
From still, because this study just goes on and on and on. Yes?
Stating what you've got to say to the end, could I just ask you to refresh my mind? Having tabled your paper set advertisement, in which publication?
Australian, on the 1st of April.
The Australian.
Just to throw them.
1st of April, that's a significant date,
isn't it? Australian Fool's Day, they'll bring that up in court. No, we thought it was a joke. Well, you missed the deadline, too bad, you're supposed to know. Court presumes you know the law.
And carrying on from that has stimulated at least one response, correct? That stimulated a response?
No, there has been more than one.
There's been more than one?
There's been a number of hits to the website, quite a few. There were 17 virtually on the day that hit the website.
Oh.
But I don't know who my takers are, really, yet. I did serve it on one party, and that's where I think this defence came back, this form defence, which means we're underway.
And have you responded to that form response?
Oh.
Have you responded?
I thought about it and thought that was an interesting response, because it's got all sorts of implications. And I thought that's something a lawyer would come up with. It's a form response, but it stopped dealing with this. So let me deal with a little bit of this. I'll explain what these charts are a bit like. As you can see, the annual figures go up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. They're very jagged and they go up and down. So this would throw a lot of people in climate warming. How do you interpret that? It just goes up and down and up and down wildly, year after year after year, fluctuating. The trend line, however, is interesting because the trend line tells a story and we rely upon that. They say there's a trend line which seems to be generated by a standard computer spreadsheet. These are done on a spreadsheet on a Linux system and they go up or they go down and you can have a look at those. You can see over on the left how many degrees we're actually talking about in all of this. And people who've looked at that say, well, hang on, that's not much.
It's fractional.
Fractional. It's not much. It's not like 20 or 10 or 20 that we're really talking about that are significant here. So if they're talking about very small amounts of degrees that are going on. So what I found today is I thought, now I know, I'm of the opinion, the thesis is, that the minimum of the minimums for Antarctica are a real bellwether. If global warming is happening, it's got to happen there because there's a lot of upward movement that can happen in global warming on those minimums of minimums. They can go a long way up. The higher upper figures may be really already high, but the lower figures, if global warming is happening, it's got to be permeating through there as well too in Antarctica. So I had done a study on that and I knew when I finally did the trend line for the minimum of the minimums for Antarctica, which are around about minus 25 degrees, it was perfectly flat.
Yep.
And I thought, yep, it's a perfectly flat trend line. But today I thought about it more. I thought, well, I'll magnify that aperture that it's looking at on the graph, and I'll magnify it. And I magnified it. It was still perfectly flat. And I magnified it again. It was still perfectly flat. And I magnified it again, and I thought I noticed a downward trend. So we have a downward trend. But what is that downward trend? That downward trend turned out to be 1/1000th of a degree in 66 years. That's 0.15 of a degree over a millennium. And I thought, what are we measuring here? What is this really measuring? What can be decreasing at the rate of 1/1000th of a degree in 66 years? Is not this a measure of the heat of the sun, really, that's showing up here? This is really showing up as a measure of the sun's cooling, coming through in the Antarctic sphere. So I thought, not only have we got the final arbiter showing there's global cooling going on at the rate of 1/1000th of a degree in every 66 years, but we've got the cooling of the sun. We've got a measure of the cooling of the sun that comes through in this study. And I thought that was interesting because I never thought that would come up, that figure would be a measure of the cooling of the sun showing up in the data.
Next question, please. Who's that? Right, yes, sir, you.
Could you shut the door over there? Because that man doesn't have a door anywhere.
Thank you, pardon.
If you can shut that door there.
Which door?
This one. The bathroom door, because that man doesn't like shutting doors.
Oh, all right.
He must not have a door to his bathroom.
All right. Okay, yeah, we'll settle that one. Some of you for plumbing. Okay, your question.
So I remember about the Skywatch.
Excuse me, please. Just calm down.
I haven't heard of Skywatch.
Start your question. I think they've calmed down now.
I'm a member of City Skywatches, and there's a gentleman there that does readings of sunspots on the sun.
Hi.
So, and there's an 11-year cycle of sunspots, but this cycle of sunspot, there's supposed to be a hide, and but it's gone. There's no sunspots. So, is that what you're talking about when you say 11?
The rainfall.
The sunspots on the sun.
The solar cycle of rain. The sunspots.
Yeah.
Every 11 years, it shows up in the rain. The rainfall cycle for Sydney.
No, it's not. No,
in the graph.
He's saying that like there's an 11-year cycle, and then all of a sudden now there's no sunspots. On this 11-year cycle, there's no sunspots. So is that what you're saying?
Well, I haven't got the graph in front of me, but maybe that it might be just in the middle at the moment.
It's a very quiet period at the moment.
Yeah.
It's a very quiet period when it's really supposed to be a very heavy period. It's like every year.
Have a look at the graph on the website. It'll be on the website.
So you got a graph on the website? The
graph is on the website. The website is, if you would like to write it down, if you want to write down the website address, it's scwl.org/gwasn.html. It ends with an HTML.
And you can give them that after the meeting if they can't quite get it all in one go.
Yes, you can get that after the meeting.
Okay, let's have the next question. Next question. Who's that? At the back, there's Steve.
Dr. Murphy.
Yes.
I am intrigued to see that I googled your name in the website, and to my understanding, you're the only doctor that has done so many high court challenges.
I've never done a high court challenge.
You've actually done, taken to court on this occasion, or were there other subjects that you have taken to court? And is this a pattern of yours?
No, I've never done a high court challenge.
All right.
So the data's wrong.
Any sort of...
You mean Supreme Court?
You're the only one doctor that I've come across that's in Australia that's actually done so many...
There aren't many.
...court cases.
There aren't many.
And one of the interesting ones is King David. Do you know anything about this?
That's never been to court.
No, I didn't say court. I said put submissions in of that sort. What are they doing now? Is this a pattern or is it just...
That's no court case.
Only one that you ever done.
I've had two Supreme Court cases, I think. One going back to childhood, which is a long-term one from the age of 10. And there was one that I did recently, the one in the Equity Division of the Supreme Court. There's only been two... In the Supreme Court.
And
there's been the District Court, there's been one in the District Court,
yep.
And maybe two or three or four in the local courts.
So this is not the first case you've ever been in?
No, I've done others, but I'm a litigant in person. I don't use a lawyer, I do it myself.
Pardon me, David, look, this is a question not relating to the content of your talk.
Yes, it
at
is
all.
Not related.
It's quite out of order. Yes, Jim.
David, are you aware of the content of Andy Pittman's admission that drought and climate change are not linked? I've sent it to your email.
Thank you, I'll have a look at it.
That was only like half an hour ago.
Thank you, I'll have a look at it.
And would any legal proceedings take note of a single person's accidental truth bomb like that? Because it's very, well, when you see it, it's extremely clear. And I can arrange for you to get the audio of it. Well, it's actually on my phone, as it happens. That thing was all in the news last year, and it still comes up from time to time.
I'd have to have a look at what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I'd have a look at it. Any other questions?
Okay, let's have yourself go on.
So, David, I did ask, what do you have concluded? Now, you said that you found that there's almost imperceptible temperature increase. In fact, that it was a minuscule of a percentage. But this is in contrary to what we're hearing all day long. We're hearing we have risen 1 or 2 degrees. And we're hearing scientists say if we go up 3 degrees, it'll absolutely be a catastrophe.
It does more than that every day. It goes up and down by many degrees every day.
This is the overall effect that the scientists are talking about. So could you please answer how your study relates to what
I'm talking about? If you go on the maximums, you'll see the maximums, the trend line is more. But I say to those who say the temperature's going up 3 degrees, it does more than that every day. It goes up and down by 10, 15 every day.
And
doesn't affect
the average effect over the year that they're reporting. No. Just like you.
No, you need to ask them
more. It's the media getting onto it.
Well, how is it then that we're getting the Antarctic ice shelves breaking away?
It's not showing up in the figures. Look at the maximums. Have a look at the study. Look at the study.
Yeah, I guess that comes to, if you finished.
There's anecdotes on both sides. There's all sorts of things.
Well, this always comes to my query. My understanding is that your whole premise is based on a bomb research that you've
done.
That's
right, yes.
So that's where my confusion is, because my understanding is that scientists are using a lot of atmospheric testing, so they're balloons, planes, satellite, and this type of thing. And so they're looking... my impression is that if we have a body of weather observations that's this size, what you're looking at is this much, when actually what's available is this much.
Yes, there's plenty of material on both sides. I'm just going on raw data, statistical, numerical, and analysing that with a premise saying you can come to a conclusion based on that.
So with atmospheric testing, have you considered looking at that at all?
The which testing?
Atmospheric testing.
No, I haven't done that. I haven't gone into wind. The temperatures will show up in the atmosphere. But I'm just going on the readings.
Sure thing.
Official data. Official data.
Well, there's official atmospheric data you can view as well.
I'll let someone else do that.
Now, before you take the last three questions, I just want to do a bit of market research with your permission. There's a few new people here tonight. Who came from the meetup site, please, that we have, our meetup site? Could you indicate? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, that's good. Who came from the 5DOC organisation, the climate people? 1, 2, 3. Who came from, who is a personal contact of our speaker? 1, 2, 3. Okay, that was just me doing research. I do that kind of thing. It makes me happy. Now I know where you're from. Keep the habit. Now, questions, last three questions. Yourself, Peter.
I just want to ask you, there's a document of United Nations, their plan, in 20 years' time, the global average temperature will be, I don't know exactly, about 2 degrees higher. Are you aware of that document? Or?
No, but it goes up and down by more than that each day.
Yeah, because the reason I ask you that question is, I'd like to give you another perspective, to help you to win the case. Because if that's the document, that's their conclusion. So what they do is, they're predicting the temperature, which is called a temperature forecasting, which we do every day. And then you, when you, scientifically, when you want to predict anything in the future, you have to give a margin of error, because otherwise you cannot come up with any number. So then you should focus on the margin of error, because when you look at it, when you're forecasting things, say you forecast in 2 days' time, in 2 weeks' time, in 2 months' time, in 2 years and 20 years. The further you forecasting, logically, the margin error have to be getting a lot bigger, right? So you forecast in 2 days' time, the forecast have to be a lot more accurate compared to, say, 2 months, 2 years. Because in that document, when I read it, there's no margin of error. So when you go to the court, you should ask them, what is the margin of error? Because if the margin of error is more than 100%, then the temperature could be like 4 degrees high or minus 4 degrees.
But in a court case, we're not going on prognostications and forecasts. We're just talking about past evidence.
Because that's the whole propaganda is about. Because it's top. They say, well, in 20 years' time, if we're not doing anything about it, and then the temperature will be 2 degrees higher.
But it's not showing any higher.
Yeah, what I'm saying, it's a
fault. That means that they can't prove in the future.
Because I even asked to those scientists, you know, no one can tell me, because you can't forecast anything without margin of error. Mm. I think you're using logics instead of,
yeah. Yeah, well, I'm not forecasting in this.
Okay, next question from somebody.
Thank you very much. You've done a very good presentation for us here. A few years ago, I was interested in all of this issue of how much the temperatures are going up. So the first place that you would search is the Bureau of Meteorology. And I noticed a pattern over there that in all those sites that they measured the temperature around the city, it seemed to me that the only two that would constantly get above the average measuring for the month would be the airport and Observatory Hill. They would be always at least 1.9, 1.6 degrees higher than any other measuring spots around this city. And the more westerly you go, the less increase from that average that has been for that area. So you get something like 0.3 of a degree would be the increase in Penrith, and it would be 1.9 at the airport, 1.6 in the city. I noticed a pattern like that happening with the city, but I haven't observed much on it in the bush. Did you observe any similar patterns?
Yes,
like
I did.
That?
That's why I put the Sydney one in
airport
there.
Airport and city centre, considering other cities. I haven't checked that, like Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne, Perth. Did you notice the same pattern of significantly increased in the city and almost no increase as soon as you get to bush?
Well, they've got all those buildings that are neat things.
Right. It's called the UHI, the Urban Heat Island Effect.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Okay. Now, yes.
Yes. The my understanding of the climate scientists and what they're saying is that you cannot come to conclusions about global warming or climate change by looking at any one position on Earth, any one country. For instance, looking at Australia, you cannot come to any conclusions about global climate change. They are also saying that climate change in the Northern Hemisphere is much greater than the Southern Hemisphere, and that almost certainly is due to the fact that the Northern Hemisphere has a greater proportion of land to water, whereas the Southern Hemisphere has greater water to land. They're also saying that the Arctic is reducing and thinning, and please don't deny that. That is what is happening at the Arctic. It is not happening at the same rate at the Antarctic. Please explain.
Okay.
Well, I'm only talking about the Australian figures. I'd like to see these studies being...
It's not good enough.
Well, I'm not going to do Europe. I'm not going to do America.
You've got to look at the whole world and see what the climate scientists...
Well, I'm not going to do all of those because it's a lot of work. It took a year and a half to do Australia.
It's not good enough.
What about the atmospheric? Are you thinking maybe that would be your next research?
Atmospheric?
The atmosphere.
I'm doing one on coronavirus at the moment. We're already doing something, which we'll do it. I'd like to do a talk on it at some future.
I think you might have. Is there any last person who has been neglected?
Neglected? You have been. Yes, Fred.
Yeah. We've had another speaker here before, along similar lines. He claimed this is what worldwide conspiracy among scientists, a left-wing conspiracy. Yeah. Now, I challenged him too. We've never had that in history, that all the scientists in the world, 97% or something in that field, have the one theory, and they're pushing this theory because they're getting paid for it or whatever, or they're left wing, whatever the reason. But it doesn't make any sense to you that the first time in history that there's been this scientific bias in one direction, you know? We've never had that.
Well, money's probably got something to do with it.
That's not true. Yes. That's not true.
Give an example.
Galileo. He won a Nobel Prize. He was the one doctor of the world that claimed you could cure stomach ulcers.
Barry Marshall.
Yeah. By simply taking penicillin. The world medical community disagreed with him and called him a fool. Mm. And he was proven to be correct, and he was awarded a Nobel Prize.
Okay.
He is an Australian.
Well, that's a different
issue. So you're wrong.
And the science
is... Hang on, excuse me. I think the speaker might like to respond, since I think the question was directed to you, wasn't it?
Well, that's right.
Do you wish to respond to that?
What was the question again?
Well...
All the scientists on one side.
There's never been such a scientific conspiracy. Yeah. The claim there about the penicillin curing something, well, that's part of science, you know. Things have changed, but...
Different.
Science doesn't make a claim of being absolutely right all the time.
Climate scientists.
But this has been going for a long time, since the middle of the 20th century, and there's been no.
Well, as I said, money's probably got something to do with it, and peer pressure and so on.
Fred, we'll discuss it later.
Aaron, just a minute. Hold it. Yeah. Now, no further question, no last question. I'm a Democrat. Okay. Now,
just say this. This recording will be up on the website if you want to hear it again.
Wonderful.
And send the link on to other people to have a listen to and prove it wrong.
Now, I like the idea of a country where there are no factories, no cities, very few cars, and everybody, or almost everybody, is dressed for dinner. You've guessed it. It's the Antarctic. And the Antarctic is a place which is, as David very appropriately said, the bellwether for this particular survey, because there is very little industrial activity to cause climate change. The climate hasn't changed very much, only very fractionally. David has done a lot of research that he's brought to you tonight on a very contentious issue which people will not agree about, quite obviously. That's why we're here. The open forum is here, not for people to agree, but for people to know the limitations of, you know, their own opinions. And hopefully, as the old lady said, how do I know what I think until I hear what I say? Well, I've learnt a certain amount tonight about the global warming issue, and I'm very grateful to David for sharing his expertise with us, and I'd like you to thank him in the usual way, please. And you'll have an early supper. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And I got my second defence tonight.
How did it go? How was it?
Good. I think it went well.
Well, you had some people. I didn't expect to come.